With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Later on in the hour, we're going to talk with a local sports parenting dad whose son is going to be a very high draft choice in this week's upcoming Major League Baseball free agent draft. And it's a story with an unusual personal twist for yours truly, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. That's later on in the hour. But first up, as you know, we've been talking for the last few weeks about the long-awaited and imminent return to youth, high school, and travel sports after our kids are finally given the green light by the individual state governing bodies. Obviously, we all can't wait. It's been a long, long time, and now particularly as the weather is improving, we and our kids, boy, we're ready to go. But I have to ask you this, you know, our amateur sports, how are they going to change? I mean, once the green light is given, will our kids just move on and just pick up the pieces and play again as if nothing happened? Well, my instincts tell me no. There's going to be a number of new hurdles that will be put in place. And for starters, I mean, I think this is just a no-brainer. Every youngster will have to take some sort of antibody test. And of course, they will have to pass that test in order to be cleared to play, particularly in the high school or the travel league level. And not just for starters. It's pretty certain, I would think, that unless your kid has been cleared to play physically by a physician with a medical test for COVID-19, unless they pass that, they're not going to be able to go out and compete. But I also get the sense, from a legal perspective, that every kid and their parents will have to sign some sort of legal waiver that if they somehow contract the virus from playing sports, then they agree that they won't sue the school district or the travel team or the youth sports organization because of this. I mean, the question I have for you this morning is, how will parents react to this? I mean, ask yourself, would you sign this kind of document on behalf of your kid? I mean, and are waivers like this, are they even legally enforceable? So, because of the legal component, I've asked my good friend and longtime legal contributor to WFAN and to the Sports Edge, Steve Callis, to investigate the possibility of parents being asked to sign legal waivers on behalf of their athletes. And Steve joins me this morning. Steve, how you doing?
As good as can be under the circumstances, Rick. Great to be with you as always.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, this has been an interesting time for sure. Now, look, Steve, we all acknowledge that waivers, they're not being pushed yet. I mean, we're all waiting to see how all the rules and regulations are going to come down. We're still waiting for that. Now, obviously, we're into June. Obviously, parents in particular are eager to get their kids out of their homes, their apartments, and get them back out to playing sports again. But, you know, it just hasn't happened yet. And again, we continue to wait for real specific guidelines and directions. But the legal aspect of this, I mean, I know for what you were telling me the other day, there's at least one youth sports organization, an association, that has put forth a legal waiver. Can you sort of review at what that means? And what is the whole concept of legal waivers? Are these even work?
Well, they do work to an extent, and it's usually to protect the school district or the, you know, big, powerful, rich, even though they might be a 501c3 company. It's always to protect who would be the defendants. It's virtually never to protect your kid, frankly. Mm-hmm. And you know, they've been around forever. Generally speaking, I think it's fair to say the general rule is you as the parent can sign a waiver that protects the entity, which, of course, you'd prefer not to do, that protects the entity from ordinary negligence. But nobody can make you can sign a waiver that even says the entity is protected from gross negligence. That's not enforceable as a general rule across the country. But ordinary negligence, which is, you know, the four elements, do they have a duty of care to you? Yes, if you're playing on a high school team or you're playing on a travel team. Is there a breach? That's always the issue. What caused it? And then, of course, were there damages? The interesting thing about COVID, as you know, is it's not something you can see. It's not something that readily comes out. But now, at least the one waiver I've been able to get my hands on, which is a very tough deal, especially if you're not actually sending your kid to a travel team, for example. Yep. But it now has specific, in fact, it talks about the risk for communicable diseases, including but not limited to COVID-19 or other medical conditions, disease, or maladies. And you acknowledge that risk. And then the next paragraph of the waiver I have, and I'll quote you now, and this is in all caps except for a few words in this sentence, Rick, and it's, quote, I is either the kid who's playing or more likely the parent, frankly.
Sure.
I knowingly and freely assume all such risks, both known and unknown, even if arising from the negligence of the releasees or others, and assume full responsibility for my participation. Now, that's very, very, very broad. I mean, they got lawyers to make it as broad as they could make it.
Sure.
So when push comes to shove, though, and specifically, and look, I'm just thinking this through because there are no, as far as I know right now, there's still no CDC guidelines what we're going to do for football practice in August, for example, in high schools, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting into politics, the CDC and the White House have been at loggerheads. You probably know the almost funny thing now. It's sad, but almost funny. And that is the CDC came out with guidelines for states to reopen. The White House thought they were too strict. They pulled them. And then the CDC's watered down guidelines literally came out after 48 states had opened.
Yeah. It's
so good to get them after the fact, but that's a problem. So looking forward, frankly, and the thing I'll use, and I'm just coming up with these things because there's nowhere to go to find them, is let's say masks. Everybody says, right, you should wear a mask, you should socially distance, you should wash your hands, there should be sanitizer all around. There is actually a class action against Walmart already that's been filed where an employee died, and they're talking about these kinds of things weren't available at Walmart. So I'm just throwing this out now. So if you're in a football program, I don't think you're going to wear a mask during practice. I don't know. But if you have, like, meetings in your indoor meeting room, and indoors versus outdoors, you know, is a problem. If you have meetings in your indoor meeting room and nobody wears a mask, that's more than just ordinary negligence to me, as opposed to having these things outside and having your kids wear a mask. I don't know where the dividing line is going to be between wearing a mask and not. You're familiar with the picture from the flu epidemic in 1918 where they showed Major League Baseball players, the batter, the catcher, and the umpire wearing a mask during a game. And I don't mean a catcher's mask or an umpire's mask. I mean in addition to. So the things I'm looking at now, which are things we know nothing about, is the CDC going to come out with a guideline, whatever sport you play, you should always wear masks unless you're playing the sport, a meeting, for example. Are you going to have to sit apart in the baseball dugout if you have full baseball? We don't know any of these things, Rick. So the reason for the waiver from the entity's point of view is, frankly, to protect them, not you. Pretty much everybody knows that, and you have to take that into account because COVID is not something you can see. But if I sent my kid to a travel team or a camp, more importantly, high school athletics, I'd be very, very worried because this is not something you can see. This is a different kind of virus, and we don't know if it's coming back. You got hundreds of thousands of people protesting, whatever you think of that. I'm all for protest, but I'm worried about a pandemic in New York City, a spike, for example, because they're just getting to phase one. And in Westchester, as you know, they're getting to phase two. So we're still early in the process, and we really have no guidance right now.
Yeah, and we're talking this morning with Steve Callis, and Steve just presented a very, very solid overview of where we are. And Steve's using terms like, we don't know yet, and there's no been guidelines, and nobody really knows what's happening next. And it's all counterbalanced, of course, Steve. And friends, we'll take your calls, of course, at 1-877-337-6666, because if you're a sports parent, you're going to have to deal with these things at some point. And as I mentioned on last week's show, if you're waiting for guidance, it's just not forthcoming yet. It may happen at the end of the month. It may happen sometime in July, but it hasn't happened yet, and nobody's really sort of giving or taking a stance because nobody really knows what is going to take place. But counterbalancing what Steve just mentioned about these potential legal waivers, having the parents or the sign on behalf of their kids that you won't sue if your kid gets sick, is the fact that, yeah, parents say, but kids don't seem to be the prime target of this disease. It's mostly focused on the elderly, people with underlying symptoms, this kind of stuff. So the kids seem to be not immune to it, because we know there are lots of cases where kids have other kinds of diseases or other kinds of complications from COVID infections, but they don't seem to be the prime target. So it's going to be like a judgment call, it seems, as to what parents want to do with their kids when the coaches say, hey, it's time to pick up the pieces and go back to work again. Let's go start practicing. Parent might say, I don't know, man. I'm not sure this is what I want my kid to do, because it just seems like it's still very vague and very nebulous. Steve, let me first go back to this old question about if, in fact, a school district or travel team says, okay, your kid's ready to play, your kid has passed an antibody test and passed the annual physical, fine, but we want you to sign this document that says you're not going to sue us if your kid gets sick or there's other complications from this communicable disease, if that's what it is. Those kind of things actually work? I mean, would that actually stand up on a court of law if a parent says, yeah, I signed that because I want my kid to go play, but now that he or she is sick, now I'm going to go back and sue. I mean, does that even work?
Well, again, it works up to a point. We have no COVID-19 cases yet, not surprisingly. And I went back to look at...
You mean legal cases?
No legal cases, correct. I'm sorry. And we go back, I even went back 100 years to see if I could find something that arose out of the flu epidemic 100 years ago, and frankly couldn't really find that kind of case. A less litigious society, of course. World War I was going on, of course. There was a lot going on. But I think specifically with school districts and COVID-19, because that's really what we're most concerned with. You know, it's totally up to the parents, but you can take the summer off. Although, as you've pointed out, you might want to play travel baseball if you're looking to go to college and you're 16, 17 years old.
Yep.
You might want to take the summer off, but you're still going to face the same issue in September. And you make an excellent point about kids, and it doesn't seem to affect them as much, but I'm sure you know in New York we already have 250 cases of this new kind of COVID something that affects kids, and we don't know where that's going. So I just think forward looking for late August for football, September and on, fall baseball, soccer, whatever your school plays, these are going to rise up. And again, the most they'll protect is ordinary negligence, but you know, once something happens to your kid, for example, he doesn't wear a mask. The coaches don't require him to wear a mask. The school district said, maybe you should, but it's optional or whatever. And then your kid gets the disease. You're going to come in and say, this is an incredible breach. This is gross negligence. You guys are wrong, wrong, wrong. And the school district's going to waive the waiver and say, well, hold it now. Nobody told us we had to wear masks other than we're actually playing the game, which, by the way, sounds like a common sense approach to me.
Well, and
that's going to be the fight in court. But again, it's only for ordinary negligence versus gross negligence. And, you know, again, there's a split in the defining those kinds of things.
But, and to your point, and we talked about the fact, and just mentioned this a few minutes ago, Steve, we know that the kids, teenagers, kids in their, kids in their early 20s, you know, these are not the prime target for this disease.
Yep.
And yet, just this past week, we heard that not one but two football players at the University of Alabama.
Yep.
And these guys, Division I top football players. You know they're in good shape. But they tested positive. Then there was a kid at Oklahoma State football, a kid at Arkansas State. So these things are happening around the country, and who knows, these are guys who got tested. We don't know how many others have not been tested. So, yeah, it does affect people in their teens and their 20s, particularly top men, especially the top athletes are no different from the rest. So this is all sort of swirling around. It gives one pause as to what's going on, and of course we now know that the original projections of victims of COVID-19 was supposed to be around 100,000. Now they're talking about 140,000 deaths. We know that the pandemic back in 1918 did not last 3 months; it lasted 3 years.
Right.
I mean, these are scary things, and I feel, from the bottom of my heart, for those kids who are in high school, who are watching their high school years basically being sort of, you know, washed away because they can't play sports, this is terrible. But at the same time, there's got to be some balance here between common sense and also trying to figure out, okay, let's make sure we're all on the same page and we all have the same interest at heart. That's why I just wonder if a school district says, well, we're going to have you, or a travel team's going to say, got to sign this waiver because we don't want to get sued in case your kid gets sick. It's tough. Let's take some calls on this. 1-877-337-6666. Let's go to our friend Ed Ward over in Jersey. Hey, Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing? Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Steve, I have a question for you, and I, being that you're an attorney and I can ask this question. I'm running a team prospect showcase, if everything goes through, whether Governor Murphy allows us or a lot of it has to do with the NCAA also. And I feel I have to get a waiver form out. What are some things that I should have in there so this way, if something does happen because of COVID-19, I'm not responsible per se?
Well, again, I can specifically read you what I referred to earlier, because there aren't that many out there already, Ed, but you know you're getting right into it right now. We're all kind of in the same boat from a coming out of it, but we don't know anything from March or April or May because literally nothing happened. But, you know, the one that I have from a well-known based in Florida now, so they're already starting down there, would say things like, the risk to have contact with individuals who have been exposed to and or have been diagnosed with one or more communicable diseases, including COVID. The child or the parent of the child is accepting that risk that you might get it, and you will not hold me liable, even if I'm negligent. And again, that's where the battle is. So to protect yourself, and you're better off talking to a lawyer who specifically does these things, frankly. I'm not trying to give out legal advice over the phone or on the radio. But
right. Well, I have one written up, but I just want to make sure if I needed to add any other things.
You might want to talk to a personal injury lawyer, frankly, which I don't do any of that stuff. But it is kind of a two-way thing, you know, and I'll just throw out to you what I threw out earlier, and that is, it seems to me you're going to have these kids wearing masks, for example, at all time. You're going to have a lot of hand sanitizer around. You're going to have the ability for these kids to go into a bathroom and wash their hands frequently. You're going to have to make sure that stuff is cleaned up all the time. And these are very high standards for you to meet, but that's the best thing to not only protect yourself, frankly, Ed, but of course to protect the kids, which I'm sure is your main goal.
Ed, it's an interesting situation, and as always, thank you for the call. I think Steve's point is, and advice is good, to go and talk to a personal injury attorney to make sure this is as tight as possibly can, because, yeah, this is something you have to really seriously consider. Ed Ward, thank you for your comments. Let's move on. Let's go to North Massapequa on the island. Hey, Frank, you're next up on the fan.
How are you guys? Good to hear that. And I'm glad you guys are talking about this topic, because it's been a buzz topic around my colleagues. And it's good to have an attorney on the phone. And regardless if you specialize in this or not, but you have a better handle on the law than I say 90% of people I've been talking about in my office. So, here's my question. Here's what the sticking point that I have is when somebody does come down with COVID. I mean, isn't it nearly impossible to trace where they got it from, regardless if they were on a sports team or not? I mean, isn't that really the sticking point of a legality? Is that where did it come from, and how could you prove that you got it from playing whatever sport you were playing?
You know, Frank, I was just thinking the same thing. I'm glad you asked that question because, okay, so a coach goes through all these precautions, like Steve was just mentioning to Ed Ward about. You're going to have sanitizer, you got to be masked, social distancing, so on and so forth. But you don't know, there's no way in the world a coach is going to be, I don't know if a kid goes home or where the kid goes in the after hours, that he or she might contract the virus. So how does that work? How do you even get around that problem?
Yeah, and that's a great question, but that really leads to one of the main defenses you will hear. If I send my kid to play on a travel team, he gets COVID, I sue them, they're going to go, well, wait a minute. Where have you been? Did you go to a protest? Did you bring your kid along? You're a 16 or 17-year-old who's really committed now? And I think that is going to be a problem. The analogy I'll give you, Rick, that has already happened in some of these CTE cases with the football players where they can't, you know, they die and then you get the autopsy and they had CTE. The defense has already been, and this has kind of been settled by the NFL in that class action, whatever you think of that settlement, but the defense was, well, hold it now. How do you know you got it playing in the NFL? Didn't you play Pop Warner 20 years earlier? Didn't you play in high school? Didn't you play 4 years of college football? You got to prove, and you do have to prove, the causation that you got it from playing in the NFL. And that's what led, I think, to that whole class action being settled, because on an individual basis, how are you going to prove? So that's a very good point that's brought up, especially with something like COVID, where you really don't know. You know, people can be asymptomatic. The young guy goes home and, I don't know, infects his grandmother, for example.
I'm telling you, it's really, really difficult. Frank, that's a real good question.
Yes.
And thank you for your call this morning because, yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's very parallel, as you said, to what happens with the
And by the way, Rick, that makes it all the more – you should always consider whether to sign a waiver. Generally, we generally sign waivers, you know, and you probably will be asked at your high school, I think. But this makes it all the more difficult because at the end of the day – if heaven forbid it happens to your kid, you're the one who has the affirmative duty if you want a recovery to prove, you know, it was gross or reckless or whatever. And as Frank just said, that you got it at the football field during football practice or whatever the sport may be. And again, that's going to be a very big legal hill to climb.
Yeah, which makes me start to think now that, okay, there might be this movement to say, and again, this is all, we're just hypothetical at this point.
Correct.
Nobody has said this is going to happen. Nobody has proclaimed moving forward this is going to take place. We're just assuming that in order to protect entities like school districts from lawsuits, like travel teams, like youth organizations with sports, that they might say, okay, we're going to have to put this in place, even though the kid may have already passed the physical and is already tested for antibodies, we're still going to put this in place. But the fact is, as Steve and as Frank just pointed out, it may be that it's almost unenforceable anyhow because you can't, there's so many ways to say, well, maybe the kid didn't get COVID at practice, but he might have gotten it at home or,
right,
you know, in a going to the supermarket or going someplace else or just in school. Very, very weird. Let's continue. Let's go to our friend Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Hey, Jack, I'm curious to get your thoughts about all this. What do you think?
Well, just want to say hello, Steve. How are you?
Good, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Rick, you know, we talked about this at one point, and you were talking about the signing of waivers and stuff like that. Well, years ago, I used to do a lot of my private hitting or coaching in the gymnasium of the school where I taught for over 30 years. And later on in my career of doing lessons there, the new principal came in and wanted me to have all of my people sign a Hold Harmless Act paper saying that they, you know, we will not hold them responsible. But in my eyes and through my experience, it means absolutely nothing. Because, you know, that doesn't mean that if you sign that, I can't, you know, take a gun out and shoot you and get away with it because you said you couldn't sue me. So if I'm negligent, no matter what, they could sue me. They could go against that Hold Harmless Act paper that they signed, the waiver, saying that they wouldn't, and it will go to court, you know, and the courts will decide. So, you know, like you said, there's so many things that are vague right now with nobody stepping up. One of the biggest problems I see with everything that's happening with this is that you get these committees together and all these different people that are trying to decide on what the rules will be and what their limitations will be all have different thoughts. So they can't come up with any ideas on what to do because nobody's willing to step forward and say, listen, this is what we're going to do. I mean, wearing masks. I mean, one of the biggest, the funniest things I always said is to Rick is that, you know, when baseball starts up, is a catcher going to wear a mask under his mask? I mean, you know, these things are just so unbelievably. But talking about last week, I mentioned about a friend down in South Carolina whose kids are already, her son is already playing baseball. They've already had games. She said that people are sitting in the stands, shoulder to shoulder, no masks. I mean, she was, you know, she's a medical person, so she knew to stay away. But when I mentioned to her about, you know, why, she said, because it's peer pressure. I want my kids to be socializing. And I said to her, you know, at the expense of their health, because like you said, this is a crazy, crazy virus, a disease, because you never know who has it. And one of the things is, like you were talking about, how can you prove that it happened at this practice and you get sued because the kid, this, from what I gather and reading about it, you could have this virus for months and then it show its ugly face months down the road. And you know what? It's such a crazy, crazy world right now with this going on. And then, you know, I mean, all, well, you know, and then Jack, and all this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to jump in here. You mentioned about South Carolina, and I was watching the news last night. South Carolina is one of the states that now is showing a serious surge, a serious uptick in COVID-19 cases. So,
Florida,
you know,
also.
I mean, it's just really, we're not done with this yet, and everybody wants our kids to go back. Understandably, we all want the kids to go back and compete. As I mentioned before, I feel so much for the kids in high school who are trying so desperately to get recruited and maybe going to play in college or just to play in their high school teams and have their high school years. But the fact is, at what cost? And you got to balance this out. It's very, very tough. We just want to make sure. And Jack, thank you as always for your thoughts and comments. Steve, we just want to make sure that when the people who are involved in this, the athletic administrators and individual state, governors, whatever, they really have thought this through and come up with some real, very, very detailed guidelines, because otherwise it's just going to repeat itself. And as I mentioned last week on the show, and the National Federation of High Schools already said, yeah, there's going to be prepare yourself, coaches, for a repeat of infections come this fall. So I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, I do think the big problem, this is personal opinion now, I really think nobody wants to be first. And I'll even go to the four major sports. You know, basketball announced we're going to start July 31st. That's almost 2 months from now. And I think nobody wants to be first. They want you to be first, and then I'll watch you for 3 or 4 weeks, because that's when I'll know if there are positives, if there's a spike, and then
we'll learn.
No, really, because what Jack says is true. You can't go anywhere and really find specific guidelines, and I always go back to the CDC, because at least for decades, they were the entity you would look to, whether you knew it or not, Rick. You might not know the CDC was putting out these guidelines. You just heard from your, I don't know, local Little League or whatever, here's what we have to do. So this is a brand new thing where we have a CDC maybe watered down, and it's going to be hard. We still don't know, and it's, you know, the beginning of June already. In 60 days, we don't even know if the school is going to open up and everybody's going to come back to school. Certainly in the Northeast, we're more worried about that because of what happened to the Northeast, of course. And if you talk to people in the middle of the country, they're like, yeah, I don't even know anybody who got it. And so it's a different mindset throughout the country, but Jack makes a good point. But I believe, personal opinion, that nobody wants to be first to say A, B, C, D, E, and then nobody wants to come back and be first because we all want to see, well, what's going to happen.
1-877-337-6666. My guest is Steve Callis. Let's continue with our callers. Let's go to Oyster Bay. Mike has been standing by. Mike, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hey, how you doing? I'm in the medical profession out here in Long Island. We got hit pretty hard. It's really gotten quiet now. So the two questions are, number one, we definitely know it's a contagious disease. It's highly contagious.
Yep.
So unless we have a vaccine or it sort of disappears, people are going to get it. I mean, it's impossible not to get this disease. So my question is, unless there's a vaccine or it suddenly disappears, which sometimes viruses do, I don't see how any waiver is going to protect the children and or the adults who are in contact with the children. So how are you going to insure these? How are these places going to get insured for this? Who would pay for, a personal injury insurance policy? I wouldn't insure any team or anything for that. It would be impossible. You get sued by every player on the team.
That's exactly where we're heading in the sense that, yeah, that's the concern. Like, okay, so if schools decide to open up and kids are coming in, those kids do, and they're interacting with each other. And even if they do pay some heed to social distancing, but kids are kids. They're going to be around, you know, in hallways. They're going to be in locker rooms. They'll be practicing sports. And if kids get sick or they spread the virus to their parents or grandparents and there's a lawsuit, how does this work? I mean, so the question is all sort of interconnected. So if the school district says, no, we're going to put a waiver out there that you have to sign that you're not going to sue us. Well, that's what Steve's saying. It's almost like impossible to enforce. It's not going to have any bearing in court because, you know, after all, there's so many ways that COVID can be spread. Steve, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what we're talking about here, right?
No, Mike makes a good point, but I think that's going to be, frankly, the argument between the school districts, all of whom are insured, right, Rick? But now when they come back and for this new school year, we want something related to coverage if kids get COVID at our school. Well, you know what the insurance company is going to say? Well, yeah, we'll do that, but you're going to have to pay me double or triple or quadruple, and that's in nobody's school budget right now. So I'm glad Mike pointed that out because that's just another side thing on top of everybody else. The school districts have insurance policies. They're the insurance policy. The insurance company is usually the one who plays if I broke my knee because they didn't keep the field right and I stepped in a hole where it's gross negligence to not have that hole filled. That's pretty simple. But when you get to this, as Mike said, it's going to be around. We're not going to have a vaccine for a while, no matter what anybody says. Certainly not in September, October, November, and then we might get a second wave. So I think that's more going to be a conversation. Maybe insurance companies will say, we can't charge you enough to put that in, so yeah, we're not putting that in. You're on your own. And then that leads to a whole other group of problems.
Hey, Mike, good point. Thank you for your thoughts this morning. And Steve, I just want to reset this because we just have a couple of minutes left during this segment. But, yeah, first of all, again, I just want to make sure people understand that we're just talking about the hypothetical situation where a school district might come back and say, okay, we're going to have sports again, but we're going to have your kids sign a waiver that you are not going to sue if your kid gets sick with COVID. It doesn't seem like that's even practical. So you just mentioned the insurance companies. They're going to say, first of all, this is like uninsurable because it's so prevalent and there's no parameters to this. So there may not be any insurance companies. And if they did, you know, say, yeah, we'll cover you, the premiums are going to be sky high. There are concerns here. I guess, and we mentioned this the other day, and we've talked about this on the show. You mentioned about a kid, you know, going in, stepping in a hole in the field and breaking an ankle. Okay, that's just gross negligence. But this is sort of like assumption of the risk, but it's for an invisible, highly contagious virus. I mean, assumption of the risk is, how do you even gauge that? How does that even work? How can parents say, yeah, okay, you tell it's safe, but really, is it really safe? And as you mentioned before, there are places out west, in the Midwest, entire towns have said, yeah, I've heard there's one case here, but nobody's gotten sick. But here, it's a big deal. It's a huge deal.
Well, that's the actual problem. And again, at the end of the day, and I'm sure the conclusion of this whole thing we're doing right now, Rick, is going to be, it's up to you, the parent, to protect your kid, whether he's pitching in three leagues and he shouldn't pitch too much, or frankly now with something that, again, we can't see, We may or may not be able to feel it once we get it. If you're younger, it's less likely. We do have these cases in the Northeast and now in about 16 states of this weird child inflammation thing that they say is kind of an offshoot of COVID. And that hasn't really been examined that well because it's a relative amount of small cases, but it's spreading around the country now. So it always comes back to you, the parent, to protect your kid. I've told you, I'm happy my kids, you know, I started listening to you when my kids were 4 or 5, and now they're in their mid-20s. And I'm kind of thankful, frankly, they're out of the whole athletic travel team, play for your high school. Do you have to play for that soccer coach? Because if you don't play for him during the summer, then you're going to have trouble making the team. I mean, these are all practical considerations. At the end of the day, you, the parents, have to protect your children in whatever they're going to do up to a certain age. Obviously, they can, you know, include themselves in the conversation as they get older. But, you know, personally, and this is just a personal opinion, I'd have to err on the side of caution because, again, we don't even have, as you've said, specific guidelines for 60 days from now. And as you also said, and as your caller said, they're opening up in Florida already. They're doing it. We read the one waiver I was able to get. It's a strong waiver, but we don't even have one case yet to know how courts are going to rule on this. And as Mike pointed out and others pointed out, the insurance aspect, the proof aspect, how do you prove if your kid got COVID at the football camp or football practice in August before school started? Assuming they're even going back to school, Rick, I think if you're going back to school, but everything's going to be on your computer like it's been for the last few months, I don't even know if they're going to have sports.
Steve Callis, obviously, it's just... It's good to hear your thoughts about this and to sort of map this whole thing out. And obviously, we'll see what happens over the next couple of months. Of course, we all want sports to come back, but we also want sports to come back for our kids, our athletes, in a safe and secure way. Steve, thank you as always, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
Steve Callis, of course, a sports parenting advocate and a top attorney. He's got good things to talk about this and make us think. Okay, let me take a time out. When I return after the break, I'm going to be joined by Ted Sabato. Ted is the father of Aaron Sabato, the All-American slugging first baseman for the University of North Carolina Tar Heels. And Aaron is destined to be a very high draft choice this coming week in Major League Baseball's draft. So you want to stick around and listen to what Ted has to say about being a sports parenting dad.
Rick Wolf, Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
Just a reminder that at 9 o'clock this morning on this beautiful Sunday, Mike Francesa will be along. Of course, you want to listen to what Mike has to say about the world of sports and what's happening, and of course, his thoughts on COVID-19 and when the pro leagues will get back to business. And as always, I invite you to check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com. We're taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. But my next guest this morning, well, there's sort of a very special connection with Ted Sabato and myself. And this goes back a few years when I was coaching at Mercy College, and Ted Sabato was on my team. I coached Ted, and by all accounts, he was, well, quite frankly, he was one of the most consistent hitters I've ever worked with. And, you know, with Ted, it made no difference who was pitching on the mound. When Teddy Ball Game, that's what we called him, when he came to the plate, I knew that it made no matter who was throwing, he was going to hit the ball hard, very hard, pretty much every at bat. He was just an extraordinarily hitting machine, and he was just flat out a good, good, solid hitter. Now, fast forward to today, Ted Sabato's son, Aaron, is a 6'2", 230-pound right-handed power hitter for UNC, and like his father, Aaron hits rockets all over the ballpark, and he does so consistently. And this coming week, Aaron, All-American first baseman from Rye Brook here in Westchester County, he's going to be drafted. The only question is how high he'll go in the draft. A lot of experts are saying he'll be a first rounder. And Ted Sabato joins me this morning. Ted, these are exciting times for you, your wife Valerie, and your family.
Yes, Rick. Thank you for having me this morning, and it's great to hear from you. And yes, we are very excited, and I just want to thank you, and you've been a big influence on my life. That was a special time, and I brought things you taught me and brought to me learning the game and the adversities of the game into my love for only baseball, to my family and things I do every day and teaching my kids. So you had a big influence. And I love playing for you, and you're a special person.
Well, Ted, that is very, very kind of you. And, I thinking about the days at Mercy, you know, every coach looks at a ball player and says, okay, how can I improve them? How can I tinker with their, for example, their batting stance or their approach to hitting or something? But in your case, and this was a rarity, I remember watching you hit and thinking, yeah, the best thing I do for this kid is not tinker with him at all. He knows what he's doing. And you hit the ball, as I said, so well, so hard, so consistently. I mean, it was just fun to watch you go up there and swing a bat. And now, of course, we're looking about your son, Aaron, who's going to be, I mean, I watched him on TV last year when UNC was playing, and boy, oh boy, he just really punishes a baseball. Now, yeah. I have to ask you, I mean, and I know, look, the rest of your family is athletic as well. I mean, your oldest son,
yes.
Ted, he's a top pitcher at Manhattan College. And even though he's just graduated, he's been given that extra year where he can come back and play next year as a grad student, correct?
Correct, yes. He's blessed with that opportunity, yep.
And then you have your daughter, Gwen. She's going to play basketball in the fall at East Stroudsburg in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes, basketball is her game, and she's a special person and athlete. Yes, I'm blessed.
I mean, this is pretty amazing that you have, you know, not one but three top athletes all going on to play college sports. Now let's get back to Aaron for a second.
Yep.
Ted and Aaron, they both went to Brunswick School up in Greenwich, Connecticut. Gwen went to Master School over in Dobbs Ferry. But tell me what's happening now. I mean, as this is unusual times, obviously, because of the COVID-19. How has Aaron been preparing? Has he practiced at all? Is he home? Is he in Carolina? What's going on in the weeks leading up to the draft? What has he been doing in terms of just preparing?
Yes. In these, you know, unprecedented times and, you know, actually scary times with this pandemic and COVID, unfortunately, all kids, you know, throughout the country were, and Aaron's season ended abruptly, and
yep.
He came home and, you know, there was some, you know, very sad for him. And, you know, and it's kind of like what I apply to, like I said, lessons you taught me in this game and positiveness and the mentalness of the game. And we use even this to be through the positive. And, you know, a lot of home time now, and we spent time with the family. And thank God I had back when they were younger, about 10 years ago, I built a batting cage in the backyard. And when I started digging it, my wife actually thought it was going to be a swimming pool, so I kept that secret for a couple of days, you know, thinking, oh, we're going to get a pool. But then as the materialized, it saw more of a rectangular stain there, and the poles came up. And she should have known that, no, I wasn't getting a pool. It's going to be sports-oriented. So,
oh, God, that's funny. Well, yeah. I mean, put it this way, it's pretty clear that building the batting cage was probably the best investment you ever made on behalf of your boys. And honestly, let's be candid. I mean, you know, Aaron is going to be drafted very high. My sources tell me that the Texas Rangers, Boston Red Sox, among others, are very keen on him and his power. But he's, you know, when he gets drafted, he's going to be getting a very sizable bonus check. So you can tell your wife that maybe then she can get a swimming pool.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, what normally happens, of course, with the draft, people are surprised. It isn't like that. It's when you're drafted, the teams want you to come right now. I mean, they call you up, they sign you to the contract, and they say, okay, you're going to come down to our spring training facility, and you're going to be reassigned to a minor league team. This all happens in a matter of like 24 to 48 hours after the draft. They're not fooling around. They want to make this happen. But now there is no minor league baseball, of course. What are you hearing? What will happen to Aaron? Will he just stay home? Will he go to a spring training facility? What do you think is going to happen no matter who drafts him? What's going to take place?
I think he's got definitely a couple options. I'm hoping and praying that, you know, he's blessed to have special advisors/agents through XL Sports and Bobby Barad and Casey Close that have been unbelievable and great people to guide him through this process the last few years, you know, since really a junior year in high school and or sophomore. You know, he was blessed to have the talent and the advice. So I think with the draft, he's either, it's unprecedented times, you know, it's unfortunate to, you know, Major League Baseball and what's, you know, what's happening. There's no baseball. There's no site. You know, they're not getting along with the negotiation. So with the draft, I'm hearing a couple scenarios is he's either possibly through XL. Maybe they could work out that if baseball works out some workout regimen that he could go to a team right away and maybe be on like a top end of a roster where he would be able to be work out with the team.
Uh-huh.
That would be like a home run. Or if it does fall through, XL has like a facility where they work out at Tampa, so he'll be able to be with around some professional, you know, pro ball players, top guys, and have that, just see what it's like and just get right to it. Or worst scenario, third, like he's doing now, which, you know, he's driven, he's a competitive, good soul, and he works hard at his craft, and that's what it takes. So he's working out every day, he's hitting, he's running, he has a throwing regimen, he's doing, you know, he did have surgery this past late summer, and he's, you know, which kind of, again, taking in a positive note, doing like, almost like a pitcher's routine, his shoulders and, you know, working his scaps. So he takes care of himself, and he's a hard worker. So no matter what entails, once he's, you know, if he's blessed with the opportunity to be selected in the draft, I'm very confident and proud of him that he will just work very hard no matter what, because, you know, his dream has always been to play baseball, and he's living out his dream.
We're talking with Ted Sabato, one of my former players when I was the head coach at Mercy College in Dobbs Ferry some years ago. His son, Aaron, is a star All-American at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and you just heard, you know, Ted talking about how committed and dedicated and how hard Aaron works, and is hopefully, you know, looking to get drafted at the first or second round, whatever he's going to go, but he's going to go very high come this week. What kind of start did Aaron have this year before the season got shut down? How was he doing?
Yeah, you know, Aaron, part of the adversity and the makeup and the DNA that you can't see and teach, Aaron started off the season coming off the shoulder injury. He sat out the fall. He got a clearance the last maybe week of the fall. Two weeks, came out, played a World Series little exhibition games that they had, three games in one weekend. So not playing after six months. And, you know, Aaron expects, you know, things come easy. So this game, you know, humbles you and makes you better. And he had a little slow start. Because of that, whether, you know, I wasn't in his head, you know, maybe the mental end,
mm-hmm.
Some things, rust comes in. But his perseverance, his DNA, and the things, you know, like you taught me, the mental end of the game, you know, it's just a matter of time, trusting himself and, you know, taking a deep breath, slowing it down. And, you know, that's baseball, you know, and just battling every at-bat. So he had like about a week and a half, two weeks, you know, hey, baseball humbles you. Then things clicked, you know, he started getting the confidence, hitting the balls like he does, little fields, and hey, I'm healthy, I'm going to be okay, listen to what the doctors and his coaches and his body, and then, like I said, you know, he amazes me to this day. I do things I've seen him do on a field, and he went on a tear. I think he hit in seven games, he hit seven home runs.
Yeah, I mean,
led the ACC at one point in home runs, and it was in the top five again. And that's kind of like his specialness, you know, that's who he is, you know, his makeup at the end of the day. When, you know, it's not like how you start, you know, it's really where you finish, and cream rises to the top, and he's a special young man.
Ted, you know, and we're not talking about hitting home runs in Little League here. We're talking about hitting home runs against top Division I programs, ACC stuff, and everybody knows Everybody knows about Aaron, in the college ranks. That this is like the premier slugger in college baseball, and yet he's still hitting these moonshots and rockets, before the season came to a close. I got to ask you, at what age did you know that you said, gee, this kid's a pretty good ball player.
Yeah.
This kid's got some real talent. He's got some real pop on his bat. What age was that?
Well, I know it's going to sound crazy, you know, with your sons, you know, we're dads, and I love baseball, and we're a very sports-oriented family, in our downtime, besides school's number one, of course. And I know you right young, you know, I was blessed to have my son Teddy, who's a very, very good athlete, and Teddy 2 years older. So when Aaron was like 3 years old, 2 years, I had a bat in his hand. And, just throwing a wiffle ball, if I'm saying, and just say, he carried it around 24/7, and just noticing the hand-eye coordination. No matter what I threw, the ball, here goes the wiffle ball. Like I'm like, taking a double take, and I'm like, so you can't teach it. So right away, I knew that this kid has eye-hand coordination, very, blessed, and I just honed that skill and incorporated into having fun blessing my boys every day, and every day of our life for. Until they went to college, we did some, whether it was a catch, after they did their school work, because that was a little contract I did with them early on. School was number one, and you get good grades, and then we played a lot of sports, they were multi-sports. Not baseball was their number one, but we were in the yard or the park, and I just honed their abilities, and we had. And then naturally my daughter, when she was born, had two brothers to chase and incorporated us three together. And my wife was a very good athlete. And the early age, Aaron, I knew with baseball, competing with his brother and, trying to help Teddy. Like, Teddy was a good athlete, but Aaron, when they play whistle games together, we'd make up games. I couldn't, no matter what I threw with the ball, we go all places, and he always had a knack to go the opposite field, which, like you said, thank you for the compliment with me. I never tweaked this swing. He always was very quiet, and I just let that kind of, mature through later years and kept it simple. And he always had the knack to go to right field. So I was like, this is special stuff.
and to my listeners, as you can tell, listening to Ted Sabato talking about his sons and his daughter, you can just tell that Ted is a low-key fellow, wants his kids to enjoy the experience, and he's been blessed to have, as I said, not one but three outstanding athletes. And, of course, Aaron is looking forward this week to a crowning achievement, in terms of being a high draft choice. But, again, we know, and Ted, I wish we had more time to talk about this, but we know, of course, that there are sports parents out there all have the same dream to see their kid end up being a high pick in the draft. But in this case, it's going to happen for your son. It's just a wonderful, wonderful dream that's coming true, and I'm just absolutely thrilled for you. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great week for you and your family.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate that. It is. We're very excited. Very blessed, and it's just doors have opened, and it's only the beginning. Like I said, it's just going to be an adventure, and I'm proud of Aaron, and I know great things are going to come for him.
Yeah. Well, Ted, again, it's exciting, no question about it. And again, from a personal perspective, I just wish I had the foresight 20 some odd years ago to have said to you, hey, Ted, you know what? You're really good hitting, but I got good news for you. In about 25 years, your son's going to inherit your ability to hit a baseball and hit it even farther or longer, and he's going to be a high draft choice. Hey, Ted, thank you so much for coming on, and obviously we'll be curious to see what happens this week with Aaron.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That, again, is Ted Sabato, former star baseball player at Mercy College, and his son Aaron's going to be a high pick this week. Aaron, All-American out of University of North Carolina. That's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Pete Hoffman. Please stick around for Mike Francesa. He is up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.